You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Engage. 78 years have passed since the days of the original USS Enterprise. Now a new galaxy starship has been designed.
Transporter Chief, beam our listeners aboard. So welcome to Galaxy Class, a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast on the BQN. I am your host, Diplomatic Standard Bearer Kevin Scarf. With me are, returning from overseas, Counselor Amy Nelson and the Chief of U.S. Resident Deportations, Mr. Joe Keegan. Hello.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, hi, Amy.
Oh, well, I don't know if I should be talking to you since you deported me.
I know. Did ICE get you home okay? Yeah.
Yes, you did. It was a bit of a fiasco at Glasgow Airport, but we managed to get me home to Las Vegas. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Yes. Single-handedly got Amy home. Of course I did.
There you go. Is it a direct flight from Glasgow to Las Vegas?
Well, it was very ridiculous. The flight that I had booked based off of Virgin Atlantic telling me that they had a flight from Glasgow to Heathrow Airport in the morning so that I could catch my Heathrow to Las Vegas at 3 p.m. However, when we got to the airport and looked at the flight number, the flight was scheduled for the next day.
Oh,
and I was no, I need to get home today.
Yeah, weirdly, they had booked you on a Thursday flight, but put the Wednesday date on it. So that flight didn't exist. It was very strange.
Oh, so it really was their fault.
Yeah, it was. And I have two complaints into Virgin Atlantic, and we'll see if I can get refunded my money. It was expensive. Those airlines, they have you over a barrel, and I had to get there. And so they charged me an outrageous, and people, when I say outrageous, outrageous money to get from Glasgow to Heathrow, which I'm sure if you would book regularly, it would be a very simple flight. It was a 1.5 hour flight. I mean, it's not like I was going far.
Think of a price. What is a 50-minute flight cost?
Right.
And then multiply it by like a giant number. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they'll reimburse you if it was their mess up.
Mm. I hope so.
But other than that, Scotland was lovely.
Oh,
how warm was Scotland, Amy?
Scotland is so beautiful, so green. The weather is so variable. Like, you can look at the sky and be like, oh, it's going to be a great day. And then like 2 hours later, it's completely different. And I'm like, what happened to my weather? It's crazy, crazy.
But how beautiful was it in terms of warm? And did you have to borrow shorts from my neighbor?
Well, apparently I brought my Las Vegas heat wave over to the UK, and it was so funny. Everywhere on the news, they were talking about this heat wave, unprecedented. And I did not pack for that. And thankfully, Joe's neighbor, Allison, amazing, wonderful, so kind, let me borrow 3 pair of her shorts so that I could survive this heat wave in Scotland.
Kevin, I was telling Amy, she was like, oh, it's quite lovely. It's quite warm. What temperature is it? I'd be like, it's 60. And she was like, no, it's not. It's 90. I was like, no, it's really 60. It's just humidity. Makes it feel much warmer than it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it was so wonderful. I got to learn a lot about Scotland history, so I might do better next time we have a Scotland quiz.
Joe, have you got a Scotland quiz prepared right now?
Oh, I can make one happen.
Yeah, but we went to the Parliament House, and I love touring that. The Valkyrie Wheel, which is an engineering feat.
Falkirk Wheel.
Oh, Valkyrie. Falkirk, yes, yeah. Thank you.
Valkyrie's yeah. like Norse. Those yes, sorry. Flying women on horses.
And I had tea. It was so wonderful. At the Willow Tea Room, went to Glasgow University. I mean, just everywhere. Went even down to Manchester, England, to visit some friends there, Calvin and James, who have appeared on our podcast. Mm-hmm. So lots nice. Of wonderful meals, wine tastings, went to the ocean. It was everything.
That's good. That sounds lovely. That's exactly what you want a vacation to be, right? You want it to yes. be everything.
And Joe and Ewan were the best hosts, just made everything wonderful. So enjoyed my time. Cheers.
And was she the best guest, Joe?
She was. She was a good okay. guest. We don't have many guests. Yeah, Amy, outside our mum and dad, my mum and dad, Amy's our first guest. So,
wow.
Yeah. How comfortable was the bed, Amy?
So comfortable. I got home and I was like, I can't even enjoy my bed because your bed was so comfortable.
Not our bed, like this, no, the, yeah, guest the guest bed. Bed. It wasn't that type of visit.
Well, I'm glad you guys had fun, and I'm glad that you made it home okay. Virgin Airlines notwithstanding, but
logs accessed.
Well, why don't we move ahead? I don't believe we have any feedback for this episode because there was a little issue with social medias this week. But what I would like to ask is that our next episode is episode 100 of this podcast. Do you believe that? So if our fine listeners would like to share some stories with us and talk to us about the show in general, I think we should ask for those kinds of things. So if you've got any cool Galaxy Class stories, please share them with us on the BQN Collective on Facebook or through our Twitter or emails.
Absolutely. That would be so fun to hear some memorable episodes, listeners, that you remember, or interactions that you've had with us. We would love to celebrate 100 episodes here on Galaxy Class.
Believe it. Oh. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
It does.
This is the captain. Senior officers will report to my ready room immediately.
So as we are recording, it is the day after we learned of the sad passing of Nichelle Nichols, Lieutenant Uhura herself. Did you guys ever have any interactions with her at conventions? Or what are your thoughts on Ms. Nichols?
I didn't have any interactions, but I found a picture that Ewan got taken with her at a convention a couple of years ago. She comes across as such a nice human being. Mm-hmm. And the impact she had on like people of colour. I imagine being a young black girl grown up in the 60s and the person that was in charge of all the communications into the ship was a black woman on a bridge surrounded by primarily white men. Must have been a really important image to see when you were younger. Plus we know that in terms of TNG, she inspired Mae Jemison to go on and become a NASA astronaut.
Right. And I've heard Whoopi Goldberg tell stories about how when she saw her on television, it's like it's a black lady who wasn't playing a maid. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I did get to see her a couple times at STLV. And although I did go up to her table, she must have just arrived, so there wasn't a line. I got to walk up straight to her. And when she looks at you, I just melted. I felt seen by her, surprisingly. And for her to give me the Vulcan salute, I just melted my heart. And definitely, please, listeners, if you haven't seen Women in Motion, it is a must see. Her contributions, again, to NASA and to the civil rights movement and to women, empowering women, is so incredible. And she has always been just classy and high quality and has integrity. She's so amazing, a remarkable person. Very saddened for her loss here.
Yeah, I saw her at her table when I went to Star Trek Las Vegas in 2019, but that was before I got the guts up to be able to go and approach these people. So I sort of admired her from afar. I'd never seen her speak at a convention either. I'd seen most of the original series people who are still with us. I'd seen them, but I'd never seen her speak.
Yes. Okay. I did get to hear her speak at the Star Trek Beyond world premiere in San Diego the weekend before Comic-Con when it premiered. And she got up on the stage and was just telling us stories. Like, her love of the fans comes through, and you can hear anyone. They just, how much she adores us fans. Truly warming. Oh, love it.
From what I've read and heard, she wasn't well. And it's sad, but it wasn't unexpected, I don't think. And she lived a good long life, and I think we are all the better for having had her as part of our community, right?
Absolutely.
So with that, let us move on to what we're here for, which is our Bat'leth battle. This is Bat'leth Battle 26, and we are dealing with two very, very different stories here. Star Trek Nemesis and A Matter of Perspective, which is Season 3, Episode 14. Now, Miss Amy, I have a feeling you know the story of Star Trek Nemesis, so would you like to do the recap of that?
Oh my goodness. well, surprisingly enough, Joe and I recently watched this together while I was visiting Scotland. So it's so wonderful watching my favorite Star Trek movie with other Star Trek fans. There's so much going on, but the basic premise is that Shinzon is a clone brought forth from the Romulan Empire to clone Captain Picard. However, with the cloning process, he has this defect and needs to save his life, and in order to do that, must have Captain Picard's DNA and all of his stuff, which means he would have to die. Since he is Romulan, Remus, not exactly either of them because he's human too, wants to, of course, destroy then the Federation and is going to go and destroy Earth with this new Thedoran weapon that would destroy everything. And he entices the Enterprise crew with a B4 model, which is an android. So we get that parallel story with Bafour and Data and Picard and Shinzon. We also get Beverly. Oh my gosh, what is wrong with me? Mm. We also get Troy and Riker's wedding, which just is a wonderful culmination of their relationship. And at the end, we do lose Data, who sacrifices himself to save Picard.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice little brief summary there.
That's it.
Yeah,
I thought we'd have been here all day.
There were lots of Romulans and many Remans, and So why don't we talk about some of those people and our guest stars? I see that you have created a list of the important guest stars in this episode. So I think we got some pretty big ones. I think the number one here is Tom Hardy. This was a really, really early Tom Hardy performance.
Yes, I think he had only been in a couple things before, so he's very new, And I absolutely think he is a very good choice. I think how he delivered his lines, how he was the mirror of Picard, different but yet similar. I don't know. I think they chose great with Tom Hardy. I loved him as Shinzon.
Yeah, he was quite young, really, when he made this movie. So, like, now he's like a big star, right? Headlining all the Venom films. I thought he did a great job. It's got to be tough when you are supposed to be playing basically a younger version of Patrick Stewart. So that can't be easy.
Well, and I was reading in the Star Trek uniforms book, thank you, Calvin, about how the uniform and his outfit helped sort of to define his character because it was so stiff and he couldn't really move freely. So that added to how he portrayed Shinzon and sort of the cold, removed, don't touch me. Like his uniform or his outfits sort of portrayed that. I thought it was really a nice compliment.
I think Shinzon, not Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy's an amazing actor. I think Shinzon is my least favorite bit about Nemesis. I see nothing of Picard in him.
Yeah, I...
Really?
Not there.
Well, and I feel like it's explained in the movie, and not that it should be, but, you know, when Shinzon's like, you know, I lived a different life. Had you lived my life, you would be doing the exact same thing. So they're not going to have the same lives because of their nature, right? It's this big between nature versus nurture. How much of Picard is really in him? And I see when they're having their shared dinner and they both are looking up to the stars and having that hope of something better. I feel that is their nature, but how they were nurtured is where the divergence happens.
Yeah. I think to look at them, they're just two bald white guys. So in essence, you could have got any white male actor and shaved his head and said, oh, you are this Riemann clone. You're going to play cloned Picard. So I guess that's where it loses me, because I don't see anything of Picard in him apart from looking at the stars and those kind of wee details that they shoehorn in.
Did they do any prosthetic work with Tom Hardy to make him look more like Patrick Stewart at all, or did they just shave his head?
Yeah, no, it was just the shaved head and then the...
Oh, wait, no. According to Wikipedia, they did create latex prosthetics from molds of Patrick Stewart's face. So these included numerous versions of noses and chins, and in order to reduce the visible size of Hardy's lips, a fake scar was added. So that scar on his lips wasn't real.
Right.
And it was to avoid the fact that his lips looked nothing like Patrick Stewart's lips.
See, if they made it now, though, they would go all at Star Wars, like Luke Skywalker, Leia, and de-age Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Not de-age him as in Brent Spiner de-aging, because Star Trek is not very good at de-aging people. I prefer the Star Wars de-aging. It's a lot more realistic.
And even that's not the greatest.
It's not.
It's not the greatest.
But I think they're getting much better at it.
True. Now, Tom Hardy wasn't the only major guest star. We also had Ron Perlman. So Ron Perlman, I first encountered him as Vincent on Beauty and the Beast. Remember that show from the mid-80s? Love that show. Very romantic.
Yes, it was. But I don't remember him. I guess I just don't know Ron Perlman. I only know him after the fact from Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, and Hellboy.
Hellboy. That's primarily how I remember him, as Hellboy.
He does a lot of work in prosthetics, right? And in Beauty and the Beast, he had sort of a lion-like face with long hair. And
well, one of my favorite actors is Dina Meyer, and how she plays Commander Denatra. Absolutely love it. She's beautiful Romulan. I'm in love with her character and her.
Yeah, she was pretty great. I did like her a lot.
I remember Dina Meyer from Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers, yeah.
Like that's the main from too. The main one. Yeah. She's so good in it. My main guest is Alan Dale. I reckon he plays the Praetor Hiren, the guy that turns to stone at the beginning. Yeah. Who's been in so many big things. Like, it's not even funny. I know him originally because he was Jim Robinson in the Australian soap Neighbours. And Neighbours just had its final episode on Friday, last Friday. They got to know, like, some like 6,000 episodes or something ridiculous.
Wow.
He wasn't in at all. He moved to America and he was in Ugly Betty and 24 and Lost and The OC and Dynasty and CSI and NCIS and a whole host of things. So yeah. Right, as soon as he came on the screen, I was like, it's Jim from Neighbours. Why is he a Romulan?
That's funny.
Well, I found Shannon Cochran, who was Senator Talara. And she also played Kalita on TNG Preemptive Strike and DS9 Defiant, and was also Lady Sirella, who was the wife, the Klingon wife, for DS9 You Are Cordially Invited.
Oh, yeah, Martok's wife.
Yes, Martok's wife, yes.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a fun connection.
Yeah. Who was Kalita? I'm trying to remember TNG Preemptive Strike and DS9 Defiant.
She was the, it's on Memory Alpha.
Find out. I am on Memory Alpha. I will look right now.
Okay, good.
Oh, yeah, I've got her. Cool.
Placed
her. Oh, she was Maquis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I knew what I was going to, yeah, that one.
Right. That one with Thomas Riker. He steals a Defiant.
I believe, yes, she worked with Thomas Riker on A Planet of the Defiant.
And then one other guest star who played the Romulan commander, J. Patrick McCormick. Now, he also played Rear Admiral Bennett in DS9 Dr. Bashir, I presume, and was in Voyager Counterpoint playing Prax, Remember Prax? He was sort of, was it the warden or somebody?
Oh, yeah, the one, yeah. Voyagers try and make their way through the space and they keep on sending in their ships to scan for holograms or telepaths or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Quite a lot of people.
So we've got some good guest stars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just one or two. I guess you need that for a movie. You need one or two guest stars. So, why don't we just move on a little bit and talk about how important this movie is to Star Trek canon. What do we think?
It's super important, isn't it? Even though it's not my favourite of the TNG movies, we get Data's death, we've got Riker and Troy's relationship, we see a continuation that we learn loads about Picard.
We had a Janeway moment.
We did, yeah, so it's very important.
Yeah, I mean, look at Picard season one and the ending and how that bookmarked, you know, Data's sacrifice and how poignant that was.
Yep.
I think just only solidified how amazing Data's sacrifice was in Nemesis. We get another Soon type android with Before, again, sort of bleeding into Picard season one with these multiple androids. And of course, yes, the lovely wedding scene of Mr. Troy to Deanna.
I did like that bit when Picard called him Mr. Troy. I thought that was fun. So what are our thoughts on this movie as a film? I know, Amy, you love this movie, right? This is your favorite Star Trek movie?
It really is. I could just watch it over and over again. I love the themes in it. Like I said, nature versus nurture and the choices you make and being responsible for them. And that hope of bettering yourself. I mean, that's what this is about. And for me, like Shinzon and him trying to get to know Picard and eventually getting to the point where he's trying to kill Picard, like, to me, that is a logical reason. I understand what Shinzon's trying to do. I don't sometimes with other villains. And so for me, like, the villain of Shinzon and his purpose and his motives are very clear and what, in my part, make this movie so memorable.
I don't know if I agree with you on Shinzon's motives being clear. Like, I don't know. There's just something about him that I just didn't get. Yes, I get he's living with an oppressed people. Yes, I mean, there's that. But that was all just sort of introduced in this movie. That we'd never seen Riemanns before this film came out, right?
Right.
So, I don't know. I don't know. Something about him rubbed me wrong as a good villain.
I think it would make a little bit more sense if, instead of having this vendetta against humanity and wanting to kill everybody, I think it would make more sense if he had the vendetta against the Romulan people. Do you know what I mean? Having to live in the mines and being brutalized by Romulan guards, or was it Roman guards? I can't remember. Whoever it was that brutalized
Romulan guards.
Yeah. Wanting to, using the scimitar, taking over the Senate, getting the scimitar to kind of wipe out Romulus, and then Starfleet has to come in and try and stop him. Might have made more sense to me. But yeah, I don't get why he's going after humanity.
Why? Who created him in the first place? Who was it that created? Was it the
Romulans?
The Romulans did. And then they left him in the cave on Remus?
Mm-hmm. Yep. As it says in the movie that, you know, a new people came into power and changed the plan. And so then they just discarded him in the mine. So, yes, I can, to your point, Joe, do see that he should be really mad at the Romulans and should be sort of destroying them. But I can see also, like, if you aren't unique in this universe, like, what does that do to your psyche? I can see why he's going after Picard as well.
Yeah, that might make more sense. But he's going after Earth.
Yeah.
Well, and I sort of think that was strategic to try and get him, to try and get the Romulans on his side. So it's like, here he is. Okay, I'm going to take over Earth. So you need to follow my plan because I'm going to be successful. And so then Romulans are like, oh, yeah, that is a good plan. Let's throw our support behind Shinzon. And so I think it was used as a tactic to get the Romulan support.
Did the Romulans really want a total invasion of the Federation? And is that what the Romulans really wanted?
Yeah, I think that might be a little weak. Romulans, just we know from the series, they're just the bad guys and they don't like us. So take it one step further. Maybe now's the time that they can, conquer the Federation. I guess so.
Anything else we need to talk about with Nemesis?
I like the visually how the battles are portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
They're maybe less two-dimensional than we've seen before, but the ships don't come across as very small. They seem almost like big, kind of lumbering battleships that take them a while to get anywhere. Which I quite like.
I think this movie, I think there would have been more like emotion about the ship. Like the Enterprise takes a fairly heavy beating in this film. But because it's the E, I didn't really care as much. If it had been our ship, the D, maybe it would have been more emotional to see it take such a beating. But we've only had the E for a couple of films. And I've never learned to love the Enterprise E.
Oh, that's beautiful, though.
Yeah, I agree with you with the E, and we don't really get a chance to see her. I feel like Nemesis is the best chance we get to really see the E, as you said, Joe, with those battle scenes. Like, I love the battle scenes with the scimitar and all of it because I get to see it. It's not too close. And it's not too far away. Like, I can, and when they ram each other, oh my gosh, I love that scene. Like, it's so amazing and beautiful and catastrophic. And then when they pull apart to see the debris and the parts that are shown on the different decks, like, really, really do love these battle scenes. And I feel like we do get to see the E. I wish we got to see the E more in First Contact and in Insurrection, but they didn't really take place there. No. So Nemesis is definitely out in space. One other thing that I do definitely want to highlight with Nemesis is the soundtrack. It is an incredible Jerry Goldsmith soundtrack. Love the music. Definitely something that I will listen to, and I will just pop that in and listen to the soundtrack.
Agreed. It does have very nice music.
I think maybe Insurrection damaged our ability to love the Enterprise-E a little bit more with that silly quick shot joystick that pops up out the center of the bridge. When they do little details like that, that really don't make sense. I'm like, oh, I wish I hadn't done that because it kind of spoils the ship for you a little bit.
One of the scenes that I wanted to bring up was sort of the opening scene where they're searching for the pieces of B4 on that sort of deserty planet. Do you think that was filmed that way because Patrick Stewart really just wanted to drive dune buggies? Like, we'd never seen a vehicle like that in the history of the series at that point, you know? I would have thought it would have been some kind of hover vehicle or something, but instead it felt very 20th century to me, that dune buggy device.
I find the whole thing very silly. The only cool thing about it is where they leap off the cliff into the back of the shuttle.
Oh, I love that. This is cool. It's just the math and the physics behind it.
Yeah. It's just very silly, isn't it? It's not 24th century. It's more, it's like something that a Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. But I will say, since you did bring up that scene, that part, I feel they wrote Worf completely wrong. For him to be so skittish on an away mission like that, where he's, you know, out there protecting, and for him on the chair shooting the Remans, like, and missing so much, they did not write Worf well, and I will give you that point.
Was it implied that Worf was going to be Picard's new first officer at the end of that movie? Or during the wedding scene, he was talking about breaking in a first officer?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a deleted scene, mind, isn't it, in Nemesis, where they've got the new first officer, and Riker tells him to call Picard Jean-Luc or something.
Jean-Luc.
Yeah, he really likes it if you call him Jean-Luc. And it's, I can't remember the actor's name, but he was in Desperate Housewives, wasn't he?
Oh.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was a different first officer. Yeah.
So it wasn't Worf that he was talking about when he's talking about. Because in the novels, Worf eventually becomes first officer of the Enterprise.
Mm. He becomes captain, doesn't he?
He may.
I think he is. He not? I read one of the Picard novels.
Oh.
And I'm sure it's hinted at or explicitly stated that Worf becomes the captain of the Enterprise-E.
Hmm.
Which is unusual because Sisko tells Worf that after he kills, is it Gowron? That he will never captain a starship. We will see next year.
Yeah.
Season 3 of Picard.
Worf is in a Starfleet uniform, I believe, in the promo pictures.
Yes.
With a black baldric.
Maybe he is Captain Worf. All right. Anything else we need to talk about with Nemesis? Did you want to keep talking about this movie, Amy? I know how much you love it.
I could talk about this movie all the time. But we do have a battle, and we need to figure out who else are we going up against.
Okay. So we are going up against Season 3, Episode 14, A Matter of Perspective. Mr. Joe, would you like to do this quick summary of A Matter of Perspective?
I will do it indeed. Yes. So the Enterprise has arrived at a planet, and there's a space station in orbit, and it's a science station, and there's some aliens on board, and they're trying to get Freddy Krueger waves to work. And they're struggling, so Riker and LaForge beam on board the space station to talk to the chief scientist to figure out what the progress has been made, and the scientist has made a request for other chemicals so he can, I don't know, do more of his experiments to try and get these Freddy Krueger waves to work. But Riker's gone back to the Enterprise and beams off the station, and as he's doing so, the station blows up. And like, oh my goodness. And but then the weirdest thing is that Riker comes to the bridge and he's been really, there's something really fishy and sus about him. It's like, oh, you've done something. You're a bad guy. I don't like you. Then they get hailed from the surface and an investigator wants to come aboard. And Picard says to Riker, you better fill me in just now before the investigator appears. And then the investigator comes on to the bridge and basically accuses Riker of murder by blowing up the space station and killing the doctor, scientist guy. So basically it becomes a courtroom drama where they use the holodeck to reconstruct different eyewitness testimonies to come to some conclusion about what happened. Meanwhile, there's some weird things happening on the ship. There are some radiation bursts that are melting holes and like bulkheads, and sickbay gets evacuated at one point and the wall kind of disintegrates. And then it turns out that Riker did not blow up the space station. What happened was that there was a ground station on the planet that was recharging every 5 and a bit hours, that was firing some inert radiation up to the station, and the recreation of the science experiment on the holodeck was acting like the actual science station. And they found out that it was this evil scientist guy that tried to kill Riker with a phaser as he was beaming out, but the phaser beam reflected off the transporter beam and hit the reactor on the station and blew up the station.
So, slight correction. Oh. It wasn't a phaser. It was the energy wave from the planet that was...
Oh, yeah. It was the evil doctor scientist guy had directed it at Riker. So it appeared to be a phaser, but it deflected off of the transporter beam, hitting the reactor, and everything went kaboom. Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
Yeah. Completely, entirely unbelievable to think that Riker did anything that was portrayed in this episode, like attempted to rape the scientist's wife and like attacking the scientist, punching him because Riker wanted his woman, and then blowing up the station. As viewers were like, nothing about this makes sense. Let's come to a conclusion very quickly because it's just nonsense. There's no risk for us as viewers in terms of Riker.
The big twist of this episode, though, is that we're seeing the same story told from three different perspectives, right? Four different perspectives. So it gives it that Rashomon sort of feel, right? Everybody's telling their own version of the story, which is interesting. But are any of the versions of the story that believable? I don't know. We'll get into it. Let's talk about who our guest stars are. Who do we have in this episode that we would like to talk about?
Well, one thing when I was rewatching, right there in the credits, opening credits, we have Melinda Snodgrass, who we got to interview. She's on the writing staff, and her first profession was a lawyer. And so for her to be on the writing staff, she famously wrote Measure of a Man episode. So we have this another courtroom drama that just has Melinda's writing in throughout it. And it's, I feel, very interesting legal episode where we get to see the different perspectives. And I remember in driver's ed class way long ago when they're talking about what happens when you get pulled over and that they will interview or ask your perspective and like how you can say, well, this is what happened. I was driving here, and then they get theirs and how the different stories are so different when both people are watching the same thing, but living through it differently. It all goes back, and I like that twist on this episode.
When did we interview Melinda Snodgrass?
I think, was that on Earl Grey?
It was before I joined.
It was before I joined.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, yes, then it was definitely on Earl Grey on Trek FM. We did get to interview her. And she's amazing, just brilliant, so smart. Yeah.
That was a few episodes ago and a few podcasts ago also. A few networks.
Yeah. So other guests that we have include... Craig Richard Nelson, who played Crag, the investigator. He also appeared in a Voyager episode, Living Witness.
He was born in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at it, I was like, oh, and he has my last name. Surprisingly enough, we are not related.
You sure?
Maybe somewhere, you know.
You know what those Mormons are like?
Yes.
We have many wives, many husbands removed. I don't know. Who knows?
So, I mean, he's one of those actors who's just appeared in every TV series of the 70s and 80s, including Quantum Leap and L.A. Law, Alien Nation.
Oh, I love Alien Nation.
Diagnosis Murder. Yeah. Some good shows appeared on. Square Pegs.
Don't know that one.
Oh, Square Pegs was a sitcom that had Sarah Jessica Parker. She played like a nerdy girl. So that was Investigator Craig. And then we have Gina Hecht, who played Manua Apgar. She was the wife of the scientist.
She's been in a lot, again, just sort of in the 80s and 90s. But she... Previously to TNG, she appeared on Mork and Mindy, and I thought that was worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. I like that show.
Mm. Yeah.
And then we have Mark Margolis, who plays Dr. Nell Apgar, the bad scientist guy that I mentioned. And his son, Morgan H. Margolis, was in Living Witness and Enterprise's episode Vanishing Point.
Isn't that a weird twist? Like, his son was on Living Witness, which Craig Richards Nelson was on Living Witness.
Interesting.
I think when you're in Hollywood that time trying to act and you get one acting gig and you're good, it's just going to turn into lots of acting gigs because you've been in one program, so you might as well be in them all in that time period.
Networking. Mm. Alive and well in Hollywood.
So we don't have a huge list of guest stars here. They're fine actors, really. But why don't we move on to the importance to canon?
Can I ask, why is Riker acting so shifty when it comes to the bridge at the beginning?
I think it's because he's just had a fight with the scientist. Like, he doesn't deny that he was having an argument with the scientist. Okay. And do you really want your captain to know that you've gone down, done your mission, and yelled at the guy who you were supposed to be networking with?
And I found it odd that Geordi wasn't being as forthcoming and just saying, I'm sure Riker will fill you in. Like, no, you're here. Tell me what happened, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Do you really answer your captain that way?
Yeah.
Somebody else will tell you. No, I'm asking you. I am the captain. You are my engineer. Tell me what happened. My biggest continuity gaffe in this episode, Joe and I were talking about this before you got on mic, Amy, is that we had another episode where a phaser went off during a transport beam. And the Enterprise was able to pick that up and discover that a weapon wasn't only just in hand, but had been fired. And that was in the episode, The Most Toys.
Mm-hmm. But I think with that, because Data was firing, like it literally came, he was the source, where this, it bounced off. So
yes, but that would mean that the transporter records should show that Riker did not have a weapon.
Mm.
I would think not only was a weapon not fired, he didn't even have a weapon. And nobody thought to check the transporter records to see if Riker could even have fired a weapon. And if he did have a weapon that was firing when the transporter beam went off, O'Brien would have seen it when he beamed in. and he didn't.
No. Mm. And they're only 8 episodes apart.
Yeah, and if Riker, I mean, of course, when Manua's record, he was like, that's not me, that's a lie, da-da-da. But he didn't even say, I didn't even have a phaser at the time.
No, I don't. So that is what, that is a huge plot hole that, now I think the most toys came later.
Right? Yeah. Eight episodes later. So, it was 322.
Oh, only eight episodes later?
Yeah.
The same situation happened only 8 episodes later? Okay, then it's inexcusable.
Maybe they invented that technology to detect phasers being fired in the transporter beam after
within that 8-week period.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that's the importance to canon.
Maybe. But what I also found weird was that Troy said that from everybody's perspective, they were all telling the truth. But it seems a big leap from how do you believe that you're telling the truth? That somebody attempted to rape you and manhandled you when that didn't happen?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Riker's demeanor between the three stories was so different.
Mm.
So different. And the way he portrayed the wife as a,
like she was stalking him.
Exactly.
That's what I love about it, though. But now you're making me think about it, and you're right. It's not making sense, but okay. You're ruining it for me, guys.
No.
She's portrayed as the lonely wife, isn't she, on the space station when her husband's consumed by his science? And so that this handsome man beams aboard, and she's like, ooh, eye candy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which doesn't really portray women in a very good light, does it?
Well, it doesn't portray men in a good light if you look at it from her point of view, because she felt that Riker was eyeing her and attacking her.
Mm.
There's also other, like, this investigator is like, we are arresting Riker. Like, he is guilty until proven innocent. And there seems to be, to me, to be other pieces of evidence that could have been used. Like, Riker, in his testimony, says that he and Geordi had arranged for accommodations elsewhere. And in Manua's testimony, she says that Riker says, oh, we're going to need to stay here. Like, so somebody could have gone to see, look up to see if Riker had a reservation at a hotel on the planet.
Yeah, because I think that would have been something that Geordi could have reported to Captain Picard, right, when he got to the bridge, where it's like, well, what happened? Well, you know, we had planned to stay on the planet, but we were asked to stay. Like, yeah.
Yeah, because I imagine it'd be quite cheap to stay on an alien planet. You just, like, use your alien air miles or whatever, galactic air miles, space miles. It's got, like, millions of light years.
Your Federation Express card.
Yeah.
Don't leave Sector 001 without it.
This podcast brought to you
by Federation Express.
Is that not from Futurama? No. What's the company?
American Express?
No, what's the company in Futurama? Something Express.
Oh, yeah.
Never seen an episode.
Oh, Amy.
The shipping company they work for.
Planet Express.
Oh, you need to watch Futurama, Amy. It's very funny. Well, do we have anything else to say about A Matter of Perspective?
So it's not important to canon in the slightest, is it? We never hear of these aliens again that are not in the Federation. We never hear of Freddy Krueger waves. apart from some of the actors being in other Star Trek. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do like when they look at, it's just a really good courtroom drama of looking at a tenant of what we believe in being innocent until proven guilty, and then flipping it on its head and investigating what would it look like the other way.
I agree. I do like the multiple perspectives. I think that's fun.
Mm.
It is way fun. And how they are played, and just again, communicating, you can say the words, but unless you have the context of the meaning, you know, because you can hear the words that are said exactly the same in the three different interpretations. So I think it's a fun episode. I really like it.
I think this is the least good of the Star Trek courtroom escapades. I think, what was the one, Tom Paris? It's the same episode, but Tom Paris murdered the scientist or the scientist's wife on the planet. It's literally the same episode. And they recreate all the different accounts.
Huh.
Yeah, there is one episode like that too on Voyager, isn't there?
Yeah. And we've got O'Brien being convicted of something and living out his sentence in a really short period of time.
Yeah, that's hard times.
Yeah. And of course, TNG has Measure of a Man and the Drumhead, which are leaps and bounds above this episode in terms of courtroom, I think.
Okay, I'll give you that. Okay. Those are better episodes. Yeah.
Well, that then brings us to our vote. Does anyone want to make any kind of public statement before we make our vote?
Do we have to?
Well, I'll go first because we all know what I'm going to vote for.
We all know what we're all
going
to vote for, don't we? It's a no-brainer, this one.
Well, it's Nemesis. I mean, the actors, and that's what we're going off of, the criteria and the importance to canon. It's so humongous. Of course, my favorite, Troy and Riker, wedding scenes. But that's not to say a matter of perspective is bad. I really do enjoy the episode. I like seeing the different points of view. And I think Riker is a great, I mean, I know he plays it, but I think it's really fun for him to act so incredulous, like, you believe me, right? This didn't happen. It's a lie. And he's like, look into Troy. You know I would never do that. And it's like, yes, we all know that you wouldn't do this. But just to explore what it would look like, I think it's a great episode and it's fun. So, but my vote, yes, of course, is Nemesis.
Joe?
Yeah, I'm not even going to justify in any way. My vote is Nemesis as well. Because there's nothing in matter of perspective that isn't done better elsewhere.
Yeah, it's going to be 3-for-3 here. And Nemesis is not my favorite movie.
No, same.
But I will give it to you over A Matter of Perspective. If it had been a stronger episode of Next Generation that the movie was up against, it might have come out differently. But it's not. We got to go with what the brackets threw at us. So it is Star Trek Nemesis.
Yay! Nemesis gets to move on. Woot, woot, woot.
Why, as if it's a surprise? It's like, it's obviously.
Well, maybe Nemesis could, you know, just win the whole Bat'leth battle. Wouldn't that be amazing?
You know, it's not going to.
Yeah. Eventually, when we get around to it, Nemesis will end up going up against Ship in a Bottle. So that is the second Moriarty episode, isn't it?
Yes.
And so that means that's not for quite a while, though. The next Bat'leth Battle 27, will be a couple of really good episodes here. Parallels. And The Quality of Life.
I'm out that week.
You guys, that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, too difficult. Can't do it.
You're replaceable.
I'm going to use my special Bat'leth battle card, which is to split my vote. Half a vote for Parallels, half a vote for The Quality of Life.
All right, well, we'll see what the arbitrator says when we get to there. All right.
Incoming transmission.
We would love to hear what you thought of today's episode, and we hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. You can also tweet your thoughts at Galaxy Class Pod. We would love for you to reach out, or you can follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts.
Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and a written review. That really does help others to find the show, and we would love your support. Where can people find you when you're not looking up to the stars, looking for inspiration?
Something I do like to do. When I'm not doing that, though, you can tweet me on the Twitter and on the gram at JoeyJoe77UK. You can email me, joepodcast@gmail.com, and you can get me on the BQN Collective. Kevin, where can people find you when you're not murdering alien scientists to cover up your love affair with their wives?
That's not what I told you happened. but when I'm not doing that, you can find me in the collective. I am there posting quite often. You can find me on True North Nerds, a local geek and nerdery podcast that I do with a couple local friends. And you can find me on Stage Whispers, the local theater podcast where we just released our end of July news episode. Oh, and you can also find me on Endless Vigilance, which is a Star Trek fan audio drama, if you're interested in listening to a fun Star Trek story where I play the commander of a space station. So, Amy, where can people find you when you're in a high-speed dune buggy chase in the desert?
Well, when I am not doing that and wrapping up all of my summer plans, you can now find me a little more consistently on All Good Things. I am also on Union Federation. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and of course in our Facebook group, BQN Collective.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We are putting out more exclusive content for our patrons, like It's Green and Amy's Math Moments that you won't want to miss. With a monthly Patreon subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings of the Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Watch your Patreon messages for details. Please check out all the details on patreon.com/BQN. A huge shout out to our very own associate producer, Jim McMahon, who you might have heard of, Trivia with Jim. We're so grateful for your support.
At this time, we would like to thank our executive producers who make all this possible. They are Mark White, Amy Nelson, Tony Robinson, and Ken Tripp. A special thanks to Tony Robinson for our artwork each and every week.
So thank you for beaming aboard the Galaxy Class, and until next time...
I'm afraid you won't survive to witness the victory of the Echo over the Voice.
Great joy and gratitude.
If you need me, I'll be in the gym.
Engage.